Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers episode 414, A Simple Favor.
And happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. I don't even know where to go from there.
Oh.
I'm old.
It's your birthday movie.
This is my birthday. Oh, well, it's got Anna Kendrick. You knew what I wanted.
And Blake Lively making out.
Yeah, I mean, just Anna Kendrick's plenty for me.
Well, okay.
Fine.
Fair enough. All right.
It leaves more for me and Kevin.
I'm a simple man for a simple favor. So before we dig in, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
I'm Paul.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Just real quick, shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. Have you liked us on Facebook yet? If not, why not? You should do that. Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. And also, if you want to support the show and make us like you a little extra, Patreon.com/RealSpoilers. All sorts of bonus content for just $5 a month. So
these maracas aren't cheap.
I know. I bought them. So there. We did all that. Now let's dig into A Simple Favor, shall we?
Yeah. So did anyone read the book?
No.
I didn't. It's a 2017 novel, same name.
Boy, they turned that around quick.
Yes. March.
They must have, I feel like they must have sold the movie rights. Like, it must have had heat.
Right, mm-hmm. When it was coming out. Yeah. It said March 21st of 2017, and here we are in September of 18. The movie's out in theaters. Well,
and you know, I bet you they were gobbling up books like this after Gone Girl. I bet you it got.
That's true.
It might have been purchased before it was even published.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was saying. That's what I was trying
to
get at.
In January 2016, it was announced that Fox bought the film rights, and so that was a year before the book came out. And then it was pitched to being similar to Gone Girl and The Girl on the Train.
There you go.
There's your answer right there. And and then in June 2017, they still turned it around quick, but in 2017, June, they announced that it would be distributed by Lionsgate and that Paul Feig and Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively were involved. So, I mean, it is amazing how they can shoot a movie.
Yeah.
That The Rock movie, Jungle Cruise, with Emily Blunt, I mean, that's done. Like, I remember them being like, oh, a Jungle Cruise movie's coming out, and The Rock's like, yeah, we're going to start filming it. Like, it's wrapped.
Yeah,
you know, and that's a big Disney movie. It's just crazy how like these people are busy, especially people like The Rock, tight schedules. They get them for those few weeks or whatever, and they can film a whole movie and turn it out for the next year.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, I will say of those three movies, Gone Girl, Girl on the Train, and now A Simple Favor, I think I like this one the best.
Really?
As a film property. Yeah.
Do you like the comedy element? Like, does that earn it more points? Whereas
I don't know. I had already read the books. Okay. I had not read the book on this one, so maybe some of that is because I could get involved with the story in a way that I couldn't with the other two because I already knew what
that's
the story
true.
Was.
I read I really enjoyed and read Gone Girl before the movie, and I thought it was a close adaptation.
I enjoyed the Gone Girl movie.
But
I
you just knew what was going to happen.
But I feel like I enjoyed this more.
Yeah. No. I hadn't read any of these.
Yeah.
And I really liked the Gone Girl movie a lot. I thought Rosamund Pike was unbelievable
in
that movie.
It's a great adaptation, and Affleck is perfect.
Yes.
Yeah.
That casting with that smirk, the, you know, crap-eating grin, like they describe in the book, and you see Affleck, it's like, geez.
How many husband and wife couples went to dinner after seeing that movie and said, okay, my blood type is B negative?
Her blood, her type was to be negative. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Katie has never seen it, and she doesn't like a lot of suspenseful stuff. And I got her to watch Sharp Objects, which was amazing. Like, that is a feat. If you know Katie, it's like she just doesn't like, she will not watch horror. Like, you know, Halloween, that trailer comes on, I go, oh, that looks good. Okay, you're seeing it by yourself kind of thing. But, you know, it's hard to get her to watch anything that's like tension and stressful. She just doesn't like that. It stresses her out. But I got her to watch Sharp Objects. I'm like, it's not that creepy, and it's really good, and she enjoyed it. So I'm trying to, like, I thought maybe that's a good ease into Gone Girl. It's very similar, same author. So
did she see A Simple Favor?
She did.
And?
She loved it.
Yeah.
She loved it.
Well, because it had comedy to it.
Yeah.
The stakes didn't feel as high.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would think, I haven't seen Sharp Objects yet, but I've read them both. And I think Sharp Objects is a much darker book than Gone Girl.
Yeah, that's probably true. Was that her first book too? Or I want to say Sharp Objects was the first one, but I can't keep track. I read it after they were already published.
Yeah,
I think all three of them. So
I think it was that other one.
Okay, the one that they brought out for a second, the Charlize Theron one. And
yeah,
then, yeah. So anyway, but Sharp Objects is good. If you haven't seen that, Amy Adams, really good. Did you watch it, Paul?
I watched the first episode and gave up.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. But anyway, so this is based on a book, and so it had the quick turnaround. Apparently the book was really good, and so you know, and I hadn't read it, but I really like mysteries like this. I really like the, you know, old noir movies. I really like it when someone is trying to solve a mystery. And I thought they did a really interesting thing with this, where the main character of the book and the movie, played by Anna Kendrick, Stephanie, she's a mommy vlogger. And I'm like, it's just such an up-to-date thing. Like, you don't see in movies. I mean, that's a fairly newer thing. And when they're writing stories, you don't see a lot of that. So I thought that was really interesting. Like, wow, that's a job. I mean, it is. You have people that play video games for a living. You have people that do vlogs on all sorts of things.
Well, this and eighth grade from just a few months ago.
Yeah.
The girl.
Well, that's true. And and she's not doing it as a career, but the main character is a vlogger. Yeah. I mean,
and it's told through her.
Yeah. It's interesting. But so anyway, I thought that was really cool that's totally a thing now. And so she does this. And I was a little confused at first because this movie does the thing where it's told, it starts off in the future. Like, it's like her best friend, played by Blake Lively, has been missing, I think, 5 days when this starts off. And so she says in one of her vlogs, like, I'm going to teach you these recipes. I'm trying to keep it together. But, you know, my best friend's, is it Emily? I think Emily has been, I saw this a week and a half ago. So.
Yeah, same here. So, I saw it long. I saw it the Thursday it opened.
Yeah, so. A week and 3/4 ago.
Yeah.
No. But Emily has been missing, and she says, my best friend. And so it was really weird, but you kind of understand later on in the movie, and from what I've read, in the book Stephanie is a lot weirder and like really wants to be her friend. Like, they, Anna Kendrick's character is a lot more normal in this movie apparently than what the book is. She's a little more stalkerish.
She is desperate. She is desperate in this movie to be a super mom.
Yeah.
She wants to do everything she can for her kid, volunteers for every committee there is at school, wants to make cupcakes, teach everybody how to make zucchini pie, all of those things. She wants to be, and actually is in some ways, that person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so it's like, in this movie, it comes off as more as like, that's like, that she's too much. But like in the book, apparently she's a little weird and a little like, you know, she really wants to be her best friend and she's really desperate for. Huh. So anyway, so they did tweak some things for the movie. So she says, my best friend's been missing for 5 days. And so they kind of, we go back and we see how they met. So their kids both are in school, and Blake Lively is working for a designer, I guess.
She's like a high powered PR.
She's a marketing director for a fashion designer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, she's one thing that I have to say, her outfits. I mean, working in the fashion industry in this movie, I don't work there, but in this movie, these outfits are like really cool. I mean, Blake Lively, her fashion sense is really neat. And if you look into it, like, she did all sorts of press wearing a lot of these outfits from the movie. Like, all her interviews, she did dressed up in these outfits. Huh. And she was comparing her photos to, like, you know, like old movie stars wearing similar outfits. And, you know, of course, I mean, she's she's wearing like the female equivalent to it, but very similar to like the male style. Just really unique, cool designs.
You know what helps with that?
What's that?
Looking like Blake Lively.
Very helpful. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You can put Blake Lively in anything. I mean, it's exactly. It doesn't matter if it's something that a man wore or whatever, a suit. It's like, yeah, it's Blake Lively. But I will say one thing, like that is right away, Katie was like, I love her outfit and her style. So I think that's something that a lot of the women, you know, really appealing is like, wow, her fashion sense. And so aside from the story, and there's a lot of comedy and it's really interesting, it's like they have her dressed up in all these unique outfits. So really, really cool dress outfits, the whole thing.
Yep.
But so she comes up.
Great costume design.
Yeah, absolutely. And so she comes up to school and after class, and the two kids are outside waiting. I think one of them, Emily's kid, wants to have a play date, and
they want together. The kids get along really well.
Yeah, exactly. And so they want to have a play date, and Anna Kendrick says, "Oh, yeah, that's not, you know, we got to talk to your mom." And here she comes, and she comes out of her Porsche or whatever, looking all, you know, dressed up in her suit and everything. And you can tell that she's really, really busy. Come on, let's go. Okay, not today. Mommy needs a drink. And so you get your first sense that she's. She drinks a lot, and she doesn't seem extremely involved with her kid. Like, you know, it just comes off as really, you've got super mom, and then you've got Blake Lively.
Parenting not a priority, mom.
Yes, exactly. Let me go have a drink. Like, you go play, I'm going to go to the
bar.
She's
kind of the stereotype of what every stay-at-home mom thinks a working mom would be like.
That's true.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So you've got these two people on the polar opposites, but she basically says, like, I need a drinking partner, especially if I'm going to have these kids running around or whatever. And so she invites Anna Kendrick over to have a drink. And so they get along very quickly. And so the thing is, when I saw that first scene and they said, oh, my best friend's been missing for 5 days. Like, I was thinking that they had been friends for a long time. She calls her best friend. And I think that's your first clue into the insight of Anna Kendrick's character. It's like, she's calling her best friend, but these people didn't meet that long ago. Like, more than 5 days that she's been missing. But I would say, what do you think? A couple weeks, a few weeks they've been hanging out maybe before?
Maybe not even that. Maybe 1 week.
Yeah. Like it's
I think at most a month.
Yeah.
At most.
Exactly.
Most, yeah.
So you get you do see that Anna Kendrick is, aside from her like super mom and wanting to be this amazing mom and vlogger and all that, she's desperate for friends, and she's very quick to get attached, and so she's just really attracted to the, not in a sexual way, but the power and the coolness of Blake Lively
and the house.
And the house, yeah, exactly. The house,
the lifestyle.
Exactly. And so, yeah, she sees, the first thing she comments is like, this house is amazing, and Blake Lively is like, it's a money pit, it sucks, we should get out of here.
Do either of you watch Big Little Lies?
No.
This very much reminds me of that. And I also like the house. There's a house in Big Little Lies where I was like, is that the same house?
Oh,
it
maybe.
Looked very similar.
Does it? Okay. But yeah.
And if you liked this, you would probably like Big Little Lies.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it's a really cool modern house, very upscale. And but, you know, it's just interesting that Blake Lively has this life, at least this look, and she's cool in the outfits and the house, and Blake Lively is just very negative about everything. You know, her work is draining and she always needs to have a drink, and the house is draining all her money. She has this husband that she, you know, says is terrible. He's a failed author, and now he's a professor.
Well, he was a successful author who hasn't written another book since then.
Well, yeah, he had one successful book.
Which is almost worse than being failed.
Right.
So, like, he had it.
He
had this taste of success. And now he's like just a professor.
And she basically says like the bait and switch. Like, she fell in love with the successful author.
Right.
And now he hasn't done anything since. And now she is a working, you know, she's out there working.
I'm going to make a list someday of movies about authors who had a hit book and then could never quite match it again. Because that is a trope that has gone on for 30 plus years in movies. I can't name any of them for you right now.
Wasn't Sunset Boulevard? Wasn't that, he was like a screenwriter, right? That's why he,
I don't know that it was one movie. He was at least successful at some time, but he was definitely having a writer's block.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good example. So anyway, but so as they hang out more and more, they become closer friends, and Stephanie really likes hanging out over there with Emily. But we learn that Stephanie has this kind of weird past with her half brother, and I'm just like, this is really strange, because so at first they're doing like kind of a truth or dare type thing,
right?
And she's like, tell me the craziest Emily's just telling me the craziest thing you've ever done, and Stephanie's
she's
like
my brother.
Yeah, right. But
she didn't jump right.
But you know, it's interesting because you see the flashback, but she's telling the story, and she's an unreliable narrator to Emily, and so she's saying like, oh, I kind of like. I met my half brother. I didn't know he was my half brother, and I thought he was attractive. But then,
and we kissed, but we stopped, or we almost kissed.
We almost kissed, and then
Blake Lively's like, "You totally did him."
Yeah, and so she it becomes this ribbing that goes on through the entire movie
for her pleasure.
Yeah, exactly.
She was ribbed for her pleasure.
Yeah,
very good.
Well, I don't think they use protection. Actually, is the problem.
Touché.
That's actually. So, but, you know, and she calls her.
So this is a very common thing. I don't know if you know that or not, not to sleep with your brother, but to have genetic sexual attraction to blood relatives that you don't meet until you're an adult.
What?
It's a very common phenomenon.
Really?
And so they will actually tell people that, like, if you were given up for adoption and you go back and you find your birth parents and you have siblings, like, that you never
don't
knew,
sleep with them.
They'll tell you, like, be aware of the fact that you could find yourself attracted to them, because you'll have, like I watched a documentary about this one time, and it was riveting. Just people that would meet siblings, like half siblings later in life, and just become infatuated with them. Huh. To the point, like, the one guy, like, met his half-sister. He was, like, 75 years old and, like, completely threw away his life because he was so, like, quote-unquote in love with her.
There's a name for this phenomenon.
Gross.
West Virginia.
Yeah.
Well, so, like, they kind of breezed by it really quickly in the movie. I don't know how the book handles it exactly. I mean, it's from what I read with the similarities and the differences, it's not like they changed it a lot, but I don't know how delicately or how quickly they go by it. But in the movie, it's like, you know, Blake Lively's character is like, yeah, you're a brother effer, and she is messing around with her, but she's also being serious. And she did, she definitely did have this relationship with her half brother. And it just, I don't know, it just kind of went by it quickly enough to where, like, they didn't make it seem like it was weird. And I'm like, but that's weird, right? Like, that's not, and I mean, I understand what you're saying with the scientific whatever, but I'm like, in layman's terms, I mean, that's a weird thing. And,
oh, absolutely. I'm not lobbying for it.
No,
yeah, but I'm just saying that, like, it's a common enough thing that, like, like, experts will warn you, like, hey, FYI, there's a chance you'll feel this way, and you need to really put the brakes on it, because you have all these things in common, and you have this almost like you're hardwired to love each other, and you don't have another way to express that.
And you didn't grow up with each other to have that.
When you grow up around each other, you like reverse imprint, and it like, and so, I mean, I see it with my son Brian and my stepdaughter Sydney. Like, they've been around each other since she had just turned 6 and he had just turned 8.
Yeah.
And like, they're brother and sister. Like, they don't, you know what I mean? Like, they're they fight and then they'll wrestle, but it's never weird. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, like play wrestle, not like they're fighting and they're mad and they're wrestling. But, when I first started dating Crystal, we were just like, should we be worried? And now we're just like, they are so brother and sister. Like, you know, because they were around each other so young and for so long. But yeah, like I said, it's a
interesting,
well-established phenomenon.
Yeah. Okay. But still very illegal. Like half siblings, it's still legal. It's incest. I mean,
but Tom
like,
is not lobbying for that.
We
want to be very
totally
clear about this.
I have no
for those of
siblings.
You who thought that Tom was lobbying for half-sibling sex, he is not doing that.
Very clear about that.
Right.
So she tells this story, and in the flashback, she's like,
come on, I want to be on the Supreme Court one day. Don't ruin it for me.
So she's like, and we almost kissed, but like in the flashback, then you see her like unbuttoning his pants, and they're like, getting it on. So it's interesting with the unreliable narrator to see it play out. I thought it was an interesting storytelling dynamic too. Usually you have the unreliable narrator and they show you what they're saying and you're visualizing that and you're like, yeah, they're full of it. It really went down. Maybe you see this later on how it really happened. But in this movie, they simultaneously she unreliably narrates it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But so this is hanging around and it's glossed over. And I guess now thinking of what happens later on, maybe that's why they glossed by it. But it just seemed very nonchalant to where I thought it was weird.
Yeah, I will say when I'm watching, I'm like, this seems like this should be a larger plot point.
No, like you're like, oh, you're a brother after, haha, moving on. And I'm, wait a second.
I think if you'll pardon the use of this phrase, they're just planting a seed.
Yes.
Yeah. But they also, because the movie is made in this kind of quirky fashion, it's a really deft misdirection.
That's true.
That you're willing to accept it as just this quirky story as opposed to like, oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. I mean, this is a Paul Feig movie and very different than Bridesmaids and the other, like, did he direct The Heat as well?
Mm-hmm.
You know, very different than his other movies. And obviously this is adapted. So he has something else that, you know, he's basing this on. But there's the comedy element and it's handled very well in this movie, but this is a mystery and there are some serious things going on in this, so make no mistake, this isn't the, like, you know, comedy girls night out ruckus,
right?
You know, this is a it's just a quirky,
it's not Bridesmaids.
Yeah, it's a quirky mystery, murder mystery.
While we're on that subject, can we just try to think back to when was the last time there was a funny mystery movie? Maybe The Heat qualifies. I didn't see it, but I know a lot of people saw it. Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock.
Straightforward, right? Not even really a mystery. That's like a buddy cop movie, but they're
okay.
Female.
So, do we have to go back to something like Desperately Seeking Susan or Foul Play with Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn?
Foul Play is what came to mind for me.
So that's a long time since that genre has been resurrected. That's in the '70s, isn't it?
Foul Play is in the '70s,
78, something 70, like that.
Yeah, because it was Foul Play, I believe, was Chevy Chase's first post SNL movie.
So maybe 77 even.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the closest thing I can think of, this may even be a little too far off, but like Veronica Mars. I mean, they made a movie off the TV show that was canceled, but like she's a detective and she's trying to figure things out.
Foul Play was 78.
Okay.
It's funny, but it always revolves around a mystery and she's trying to, there's a, you know, plot line throughout it and she's trying to solve these bigger stories. So, I don't know. That's a good question. You know, other movies I was thinking of was like, I know this isn't the exact same genre, but reinventing the noir is like Brick, you know, Rian Johnson's first movie, with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like, I love that movie. It's so good. And it took the noir setting, but set it in high school. So even though these are moms and they're obviously, you know, grown up, they have adult jobs and everything, but still they're not, this isn't like hard. This isn't Chinatown or Sunset Boulevard.
Right.
So, you know, they're not
these
older, it's a different take on the noir movie. And so, Brick was a really good example. The first thing that came to my mind of similar.
I was just finding two other movies that fit in this category. Silver Streak.
Yeah.
That's, Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder, their first one together, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And because Stir Crazy came after that.
Right.
And maybe Ace Ventura. Does that qualify?
Yeah. You know, a recent one I think that qualifies would be Game Night.
Oh, yes.
Game Night was Jason Bateman and Kyle Chandler.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, that's actually a pretty funny movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was a mystery and it was funny, but it's a different kind of funny.
Yes, very.
You know, and I love that movie, but it's not like your kind of glossy Hollywood guy.
But we had a whole run of these in the late 70s and early 80s.
There were tons of them.
And then they stopped making them.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, it is very refreshing. I mean, it seemed very unique. So this is definitely not a played out one.
Yeah.
So we go forward from the, brother effing story and we move forward. So like I said, the husband, Emily's husband, who is Henry Golding, who we just saw in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
This guy has, I mean, he's new actor. Like Crazy Rich Asians was his first movie. Here he is in this other movie that's doing quite well. It's a second movie. Like, I don't know how this guy just popped up all of a sudden, but
they discovered him for, didn't they? Like, I forget how they, like for Crazy Rich Asians, they found him somewhere.
They found him at the Henry Cavill factory.
Right.
the factory where everybody looks really great like a mannequin and acts like one too.
But at least he gets to use his British accent though. You know, like that's the problem with Henry Cavill is they need to have him stop playing American characters. Henry Cavill, use your regular British accent, fine. But that American thing where he just talks really deep and like this in every movie.
But they're both terrible actors.
You don't like Henry Golding?
No.
I thought he was pretty like in Crazy Rich Asians, I really liked him. I thought he was charming.
He does
charming.
Nothing in that movie. He does nothing.
But he has that look, like he plays the husband or boyfriend or whatever.
He plays the mannequin.
Hmm. I didn't. He didn't bother me.
They didn't
he,
give him much to do. In fairness, he's got a lot more to do in this. I think.
I think they gave him everything he could handle, Tom.
So anyway, so
he worked right up to his level of acting capabilities.
So Emily's always dogging on him because of the, you know, one-hit wonder type thing with the book, and
They're very mean to each other.
Yeah,
it's very Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yeah, and then they set up this weird. I didn't really know where this was going, but then Emily says something about a threesome with the husband and the TA, one of his TAs. He's a professor now. And I just thought that, like, I didn't really get what that connection was going for, other than to say, like, they have some weird sexual prowess,
right,
or, you know, I don't know what.
I love the fact that Anna Kendrick figures the TA must be a guy, and Blake Lively says, I don't know why you'd assume that.
Yeah.
And there's a moment in the theater where people actually went, ooh.
But that's weird, because in my mind, that didn't cross my mind for a second that it would be a guy. Like, why?
That's because you are a guy.
Oh.
And to you, a threesome involves two women.
Oh, okay.
See, in Anna Kendrick's mind, it's two guys.
See, I assumed a guy as well, just because Blake Lively's character is so, like, brash and take no prisoners. She seemed like the sort that would be like, no, no, no. We're not doing the two-girl thing. You're bringing a guy home for me.
Mm.
Like that. Like that's... Because I landed in the same place Anna Kendrick did.
Uh-huh.
Interesting how everyone has their own Blake Lively threesome scenario. Anyway, so they mentioned that. So, you know, they're traded these stories or whatnot. So going forward, so this is a few weeks into their friendship, whatever the time period is, and this is where we get a simple favor. So Emily calls up Stephanie, and she says, hey, I have a real simple favor to ask you, or however she words it. And she says, can you take Nikki, her son, and watch him? I have a meeting that's going to run
late. She says she has an emergency.
Oh, an emergency. Okay. And so she says, yeah, of course. You know, Stephanie's fine with it. The kids can play. She tells them, hey, you're going to have a play date. They're all excited. And then that play date turns into she's calling Emily and should I feed him dinner? And then, okay, I'm going to put him to bed. And then the next day, sending him off to school. And meanwhile, Stephanie is doing her thing, her daily, her vlogging or whatever. And she keeps calling Emily like, hey, hey. And yeah, she's like,
come
hey,
get
you
your
know,
kid.
No, yeah. But she's like trying to be super nice about it, too. And I mean, Anna Kendrick, I think we can all agree, is just amazing. Like she's so personable. She's so funny. She's just great. And so she's doing this thing where she's like, you know, hi, I don't want to be too much of a trouble, but it's been like a day and a half now. And so she's doing her thing and just trying to get hold of her and nothing. So eventually I think what she calls, Sean, who is Henry Golding. And she says, hey, did you know that I have Nikki? Like, Emily has been gone for 2 days. And then he's like, she does this, or she's done this before. He's away. I think he's
out of the country.
In London.
His mother's ill.
Yeah. She has a broken something, yep, whatever. Yeah. And so he's like, I'll be back tomorrow and we'll work this out. But that's where we get the first hint where it's like, she does this, or she's done this before. And so you're like, oh, what? Like, something weird is going on with Stephanie. No, Emily. I'm
Emily.
Sorry.
Emily.
Yeah, the names. It's like, I just want to, maybe we just call them Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick. So we know that something is weird here. So anyway, eventually he comes home and he takes the kid, but they start forming this relationship. Like, from the very beginning, you're like, something's going to happen here. I mean, it's pretty obvious that as more and more time goes on and, you know, and Blake Lively's gone, that it's like Anna Kendrick and Henry Golding are getting closer and closer, and she's taking care of their kids.
Well, and you could see as soon when she first meets Henry Golding that they have a connection, because she is an avid reader and, like, had read his book and knew his influences, and there was definitely, and she's already jealous of her lifestyle, and then now she actually likes her husband, which makes it all the more complicated.
Yeah, it definitely. And so as time goes on, it's like she's gone. Stephanie or Emily is gone, and they don't know what has happened. But so now Anna Kendrick takes it upon herself to turn into a detective. And I really like this idea. And going back to, like, the movie Brick I was talking about earlier, where this high school kid takes it upon himself to become a detective. I like that. I like it's a really it just changes it up from the old, you know, open at the detective agency and the, you know, the mysterious woman comes in and says, I have a case. Like when you get these average people to become detectives, it's fun. It really turns it on its head while still having the mystery. And this one has a lot of the comedy. But so she is now trying to figure out what happened to her quote unquote best friend. So she's going on her vlog and we eventually come current with where the movie started. And
I like how it's subtle, but whenever you see her vlog, every time they show it, like
the comments, yeah,
the subscriber number is larger,
yeah,
and it like it's small at first, like it went from like she had, I think at first she had like 400 subscribers,
yeah, it was very small,
and then like the next time she had like 650, yeah. Like they didn't just jump it overnight.
Did you read the comments though too?
Yeah.
Real small, but at the bottom there's always comments talking about, I'm sure she'll show up. And
yeah.
Then, oh, it was the husband, definitely. And whatever. You know, the people are always commenting. It's hard to keep track because we just saw searching, which there's a lot of social media comments.
Yeah.
But they were doing a commentary like all the people are trying to also solve the mystery. So she throws it out to her show, though. She's getting more and more subscribers. She's like, if you guys hear anything, you know, about my best friend, help us out here. And so she's throwing that out there. Another weird thing that we didn't mention earlier, but whenever the two of them are at the park with the kids, Anna Kendrick has a camera with her because she's like the yearbook mom that's just supposed to take pictures of the parents, like candid photos.
I forgot about this.
And
you're right.
Yeah, and this was another really big clue as something weird is going on with Emily. And she takes a picture of her, and Emily is like, I mean, not messing around, delete that right now. Like, what are you doing? And, you know, Anna Kendrick's, oh, I'm just taking this photo, you know, it's
for the yearbook.
And then she's, I mean, I can't remember exactly what she says because it's been a while, but very forcefully. Like,
hyper serious.
Like, delete this right effing now or whatever she says. It's like, oh my God. Like,
now, what do you think? I mean, when you're watching a mystery movie, part of the puzzle is you watching it, trying to figure it out. What did you think at that point?
So when she did that, I mean, when someone doesn't want their photo taken, I think they've done something illegal or they've changed their identity. Witness protection.
Witness protection.
So, yeah, that's the first place where I went. And I'll tell you, I kind of figured out what was going on about halfway through the movie. And when we get there, we'll bring this up. But yeah, at first I just figured like, yeah, she changed her identity and she can't be seen. What did you think with the photo incident? Why did Blake Lively freak out when Anna Kendrick took a photo for the yearbook?
I wasn't sure. I didn't know if they were going to go with some sort of like witness relocation thing or if she had had a previous relationship with a guy who was abusive and stalking her. It didn't seem like a relocation thing.
Okay.
I was leaning more towards that.
Interesting. Okay, so that is our, you know, a clue like something more is going on here. There's a reason why she doesn't like that. So Stephanie, after several days of Emily's disappearance, she goes to the Dennis Nylon headquarters. Dennis Nylon is the designer that Emily works for. And she tries to get an appointment with Mr. Nylon, and they're like, you know, he's not seeing anyone.
And who plays him?
Who was that?
Do you remember?
I can't remember who that is.
Hang on. I pulled up here. Rupert Friend.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
He seemed like somebody I knew, but I guess
not. Yeah. Oh, he's a character actor. I mean, you would know him from other stuff. But anyway, she tries to get an appointment. No, you know, the secretary's like, he's not taking appointments. He's busy. And she says, I'll wait. And I really like, I mean, Anna Kendrick is just, she's cute with whatever she does.
Yeah.
And, you know, she sits back and like the chair scoots or she starts falling back. And so she like scoots it closer to the wall so she can lean against the wall. Like, it's just, it's great that she can do virtually nothing, but it's just, it's funny. And it's she's so charming.
Yes.
But so she waits there.
She's very reminiscent in this movie of Reese Witherspoon in Election.
Yeah, yeah, I can
not
see that.
Quite as persnickety, but
yeah, but I could see that definitely. I mean, she's persistent about, you know, getting what she wants, and when she's on this case and trying to find her best friend, like she's gonna do what it takes. And yeah, I can totally see that. But anyway, Dennis Nylon eventually walks in with his entourage and he's talking, and she says, you know, Mr. Nylon, I need to talk to you. And he's like, I don't take appointments. And he says, it's about Emily, she's been missing. And then all of a sudden he gets really, you know, that draws his attention, like, oh, she's on one of her, no one really, you know, keeps track of her. She does what she does, and if she says it's important, then you know, whatever. And I think the last place that she had in her appointment book was that she was going to be in, was it Miami?
Yes.
Miami.
Okay. And so I guess he didn't really know anything about that, but so he's like, okay, well, we'll look into it. And he goes up to his office, and he's like yelling there and you know, he's not happy about her disappearance. We find out later, but Anna Kendrick hangs around and she's going to try to find some clues. She thinks that it has something to do with this Dennis Nylon job. And so she ends up sneaking around into the office, you know, fun little scene. She starts walking with someone that's running messages or whatever. And she ducks into the office and she's looking all around at, you know, in the drawers, not really coming up with anything. And then someone comes into the office. And so she has to hide under the desk, but it's one of those clear top desks. And it's a, she sees a picture of what looks like Emily. I think this is supposed to be Emily. Like, well, I mean, it's hard to say without while tiptoeing around, but yeah, it looks like Emily for all intents and purposes. And it says something like, you've got to have hope or
faith.
You got to have faith. Okay. So,
or keep the faith.
Keep. Is it?
Which is it? I don't know.
I think it's got to have faith.
Okay. Got to have faith. Okay. So it was a picture of George Michael. And no, it's a different one. So here's your other clue where it's like, what is happening? It's not a good photo. And Anna Kendrick remarks something like, oh, that's why she doesn't want to have a picture taken, because it's a very candid photo. It's not her in makeup. It's not her dressed in, you know, these amazing outfits that she wears every scene that we see her. It's just a really candid photo with her just not looking made up. And so she jokes, oh, that's why, or whatever. But it's just weird where you're like, what is happening? What is this photo? It looked like something. The photo was like a blackmail photo or something. You know what I mean? It's the handwriting was really messy and it's a black and white photo. Someone sent this to her to spook her. You know, it was one of these type of photos. And
it's
so,
like a Xerox of an 8x10.
Yeah, exactly. With this weird writing on it. So obviously this was some kind of intimidation, but what does it mean? We don't know, but there's another clue. And so Anna Kendrick ends up taking the photo. She hightails it out of there. But and this is when Dennis Nylon and his entourage catch her. But then another really good scene where she invokes something that Emily had told her. Emily says, you know, you have to be forceful with these people. Stephanie had overheard Emily talking on the phone with Dennis Nylon, her boss, and she's like letting him have it. And Stephanie's like, you talk to your boss like that? And she says, that's the way to deal with these people. So she remembers that and she says, you know, oh, you know, you better get your hands off me because I have a vlog to all these thousands of moms and I'm going to tell them about this altercation, and they let go and she goes on her way.
And let's go back to one other thing from the very first scene where Emily and Stephanie are at Emily's house.
Okay.
Stephanie's the kind of woman who always apologizes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
For everything.
Yeah.
And Emily is the kind of person who never apologizes for anything. And every time Stephanie does it, she says, don't do that. Stop it. Stop saying sorry. I'm going to slap the sorry out of you.
Yeah.
And that really makes an impression on her, which is kind of part of her state of mind when she's doing this with
exactly
the guy that,
in
the office.
Yeah, and I like, it's funny when later on when it comes up, when she, as she goes on in the movie, she apologizes less and less. And later on in the movie, she says, sorry. And well, I'm not sorry, but, you know, just, it is funny how it has an impression and she grows throughout the movie. So she gets this poster, or she gets this picture, and then she starts Xeroxing it and putting it up all over town, which Emily already doesn't like to have her picture taken or anything. And now she's posting this everywhere. So, like, my first thought was like, oh, my God, like, because we don't know what's going on with her at this point. Is she going to come back? Is she okay? Is she
now
dead?
The hitman's going to find her because she's at
witness
relocation.
Yeah, and she's putting this all over town. Right. I'm like, oh, my God, she doesn't even want her picture taken. Here it is everywhere. So I thought this is not going to end well for Stephanie for just the photo reason. But anyway, so she's putting this up everywhere. And then here's where we get to the detective. So they're investigating this murder, and Stephanie is getting very close with the husband. And so the detective comes, and it's like every time we see him come to the house to question somebody, Stephanie's there, and it looks bad. You know, it's one of those things where it's that cliche where we know that Stephanie at this point at least isn't involved with the husband, but it's like she always ends up being there. So you know that it's going to look very bad from the outside. But she talks to the detective, and she gives him all the information, and they find out that through a vlog, actually, because she's thrown out all these feelers on the vlog, one of the people said in the comments, like, I saw your friend in Michigan. And so now we're trying to figure out, what does Michigan have to do with any of this?
Yeah, she said she was in Miami. How could she be in Michigan?
Yeah, and now she's in Michigan all of a sudden. So the stories aren't lining up.
Maybe they're just bad at postal abbreviations.
Right.
There you go, exactly. So
I was at a concert. I took my wife to see George Strait in Little Rock. And we're sitting next to these people, and we're talking to them. It's a couple. And they're like, oh, our kids bought us these tickets for our anniversary. Like, oh, how nice. And we're like, where are you from? And they're like, oh, we're from, what do they say? They're from Las Vegas. And we're like, why would you come from Las Vegas to see George Strait in Arkansas? And they were like, our kids bought the tickets and they thought it was in Arizona because they didn't know the abbreviations. And then they're like, the seats were so good that they were like, screw it, we're going to go to Arkansas.
Wow.
But by the way, there's some homework for our listeners. Try to figure out the difference between the postal codes for Arizona, Alaska, Arkansas, and Alabama.
There you go. Some homework. So one of the people on the vlog ends up saying that they spot her in Michigan. And so the detective, they go there and, you know, flash forward. And this is where we get a big scene where they find the car that she rented. Apparently she rented this white car and they find it in a lake. And at this point, I thought it was going to be one of these things like, oh, they find the car, but she's not there. What's going on? No, they pull a body out of the water. And this is where I'm scratching my head. Like, it just didn't seem feasible that Blake Lively was gone not even halfway through the movie.
Right.
So,
but because the story is not told in a linear fashion, she could still be in the movie.
Sure,
without
that makes sense.
Being alive. So
that makes sense.
If the structure was traditional, I would be like, no way.
Yeah.
But because they have all these flashbacks going on, I'm like,
well, they can still show her.
She could still be in a good chunk of the film.
Janet Leigh is only in half of Psycho,
which was purposeful.
Yep.
Like, that was a total, you know, head fake on his part, on Hitchcock's part. Yep. Yeah.
So anyway, this part though, where I'm like, wow, this is crazy. In my mind, I'm just thinking there has to be more to this. But this is the moment where I figured it out. There's one very obvious thing. If you know what Blake Lively looks like, they pull this body out of the water, and I mean, as far as most of the audience is concerned, it's Blake Lively. They just pulled her body out. Well, she's dead, not even halfway through the movie.
You spotted the thing?
Yeah.
My wife did, too. And when she told me later, I went, I'm such an idiot.
Blake Lively has a mole on the right side of her face. This body had a mole on the left side. I mean, it's a little thing, but it's like, I've seen Blake Lively for years now. I mean, it's just, it didn't look right to me. I go, isn't her mole on the other side? So at this point,
I never noticed her mole. Yeah.
So at this point I'm thinking, at this point I'm like, I mean, it could be many things, but I'm like, either it's a fake, it's a plant, a fake body, or some kind of weird thing where they put the mole on the wrong side because they didn't know. Or, you know, I'm just thinking there could be all sorts of weird.
In the film days, you would think they printed the negative backwards.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Really? Seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's like, that's a mistake where it's just, especially in a movie like this, I'm like, there's no way that's a mistake. Like, they didn't put the mole on the wrong side of the body. So right then I'm like, that's
that Paul Feig is too good of a director to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
On accident.
My wife noticed something else in there. I don't know how much I can spoil in this scene.
Go for it. Because, I mean, everyone should have seen the movie.
Like we said, if you haven't seen the movie, I mean, just stop here if you've listened this far. But we're going to get into territory. Rather than circling back, I think we're going to come to it now as we get there. So,
okay. Blake Lively's character, Stephanie, has a tattoo on one of her wrists.
Oh, is that on the other side, too?
The dead body has it on the other wrist.
See, I couldn't, obviously, because that's just a movie thing, and so I don't know.
No, I have to say that my wife reads 2, 3, 4 mystery novels a week.
So she's looking
for the clues. She always figures it out before the end of the book.
Yeah.
She's never gotten to the end of the book and said, wow, I was completely surprised. She always do. I don't read any of those books, but when I see this in a movie, I'm completely surprised. Yeah. I never know it.
Yeah. So, I didn't remember that, but that's just another one of these things that, you know, Blake Lively's character, Anna Kendrick, sees her cool tattoo of these flames. Then I didn't understand that symbol. Like, they said, oh, it's charity. And I'm like, well, she works for charity? Like, I don't know astrology or whatever. So when she said charity, I thought it was a heart or something.
So did I.
Yeah, I thought it was a heart. And she said something about charity, and it went over my head like, oh, that's a charity that has that symbol. I have no idea, but apparently that's a symbol or sign. So she has these flames and the symbol in the middle. So I didn't catch that, but the mole thing is just like her trademark thing. I mean, it's right on her face and it's on the wrong side. So I'm like, that's not her. This is a fake, either a cover up, a fake body, or whatever it is. So they're like, oh, she's dead, and everyone's mourning, and they go to the funeral, and Anna Kendrick is getting closer and closer to the husband all the time. That, you know, she's there and as the best friend, and she's taking care of the kids while the husband is mourning and helping them out at the funeral. They're next to each other, and you see Anna Kendrick looking up. I mean, I don't know if you'd say lovingly, but at the funeral, she's looking at him intently. But then there's Dennis Nylon, that's his name, right? Mm-hmm. He's looking over at them at the funeral, and she gives Dennis a look and then kind of looks down or looks away or something. And so Dennis Nylon is really suspicious. I mean, not only has Stephanie been sneaking around his office, but now she's really close with the husband, right? And so I read in the book, apparently Dennis Nylon is like at the forefront of trying to find Emily. So that's one thing in the book where, like, he's really minimized in this movie, but they kind of allude to the fact that Dennis Nylon is very suspicious, but then it just goes away. Like, Dennis Nylon isn't really at the forefront. It's more the detective character that's questioning what's going on.
Like, you feel like they're closing in and they're suspicious of her, but
You never really get that. So apparently in the book, he's very much at, like, figuring this out and trying to get to the bottom of it. But there's always that in the back of your mind, like everyone kind of thinks, and I mean, this is the cliche or whatever, like you think the mistress and the husband are working together and they killed her to whatever. The other thing is too, is that, so we find out when the detective comes and talks to her again, and I think this is during the scene where she's wearing the dress. So at this point in time, Stephanie is like over at the house all the time. And
she's basically
living there. I don't think she's technically moved in, but I think at this point she's there all the time. But she is like going through and trying on Blake Lively's designer clothes.
Yeah.
And going through her closet. And so she wears this beautiful black designer dress. But then, of course, the doorbell rings. I mean, it's that old, you know, she's in the middle of this and she can't get it off because it's a zipper on the back and she's like fighting and struggling. So she answers the door. And of course, it is the detective. Like, they have one of those houses that has the big windows in the door. So like, he's looking through and sees her. She can't, like, she peeks over to see who it is and see they lock eyes. So it's like, you can't pretend you're not
home. And of course, the dress is way too long, way too long for her because there's a big height difference.
Yeah, clearly,
between
Anna
Kendrick and Blake Lively.
Absolutely.
It's dragging along the floor.
Yeah. So the detective, she's over at this house. She's trying on her clothes. This again looks very bad from the view of the detective. But now he's talking to her, you know, she's answering his questions, and he says, did you know that the husband just took out a $4 million life insurance policy before she went missing and now is found dead? And she's like, what are you talking about? And so earlier in the movie, I believe Anna Kendrick told a story. She talked to Blake Lively and said, thank goodness. Okay. And so we learn in the movie that she's a widow and, Stephanie's husband had died, and we don't quite know how yet, but she said thank God for the life insurance. It was only like $200,000 or whatever, but like, it was able to get us through it and pay for things and all that. So now all of a sudden there's a $4 million policy,
but it's running out. That was that she says. So now when the $4 million comes up, you start thinking, at least I started thinking, her money's running out. This guy has an insurance policy on her. Etc.
I didn't, for a long time, I didn't think that Anna Kendrick was in on it or had anything to do with it. But then as she was getting awfully chummy with the husband, she's moving into the house, I started to think that this might be like a real twist, like something I did not see coming. Like, she orchestrated this whole thing.
Right.
And again, with the whole, my best friend is missing, when they haven't even known each other a month.
Yeah.
I started to think, maybe she's a psycho. She could just be crazy.
That's what I thought.
And she's the super mom vlogger you think is supposed to be great. And all of a sudden she orchestrated the whole thing to steal the husband, get the money, and take over her life. And so that was in the back of my mind where I never really believed it. But then I'm like, well, seems like it could be going this direction. So of course she's like, oh my God, I had no idea about this insurance thing. And so it's a big shock to her. You believe her. She doesn't know what's going on. At this point, as I think it's just randomly one day, like, she's basically moved into the house, involved with the kids, and I think she gets a phone call from Emily, if I remember correctly. Like, all of a sudden, like,
no, one of the kids,
first clue, he says,
I saw mommy at school.
Yeah. And they're like, the husband and her trying to talk to him, like, I know you think you see your mom. But he's like, no, I saw her. And the kid is very adamant.
She was
like,
at the fence,
angry,
right next to the playground.
She was right there. Yeah. But, and then the next thing though is, like, all of a sudden, I think she gets a phone call from her. and you're like, what the hell's going on? And I'm like, is she hallucinating this? But it is Blake Lively on the other. Like, are
But before that, was there the scene where she takes all the stuff out of the closet and puts it
away?
That's right. And then she comes back and it's all returned.
So yeah, that's right. Good. Thank you. Sorry. It's been a little wet. So they eventually become romantic. I mean, the relationship does blossom into a romance, and eventually the husband invites her to actually officially come live with him. And so she goes to the closet, and she's like, you know, she doesn't like looking at all these things. There's this big picture in the foyer of like a nude painting of Emily, and then the closet is all her designer shoes. I mean, an amazing closet full of clothes and shoes and everything, but she doesn't like looking at all this designer stuff. It's not her style. And so she's like getting rid of it all. She's cleaning the whole closet out, and then she comes back like later the next day, and it's all there,
yeah.
Which is freaky. You know, it's weird because it's like, it's just clothes, and this movie isn't like a really dark movie or whatever, but just seeing all those there was a very suspenseful moment, because you're like, well, who else could have done that? Like, that's chilling. And so then later on, she actually gets a call from her, and it's like, are you enjoying my husband or whatever? You know, she's, you know, and you're like, well, crap, is she imagining this? Is she crazy, or is she really alive?
Especially because like, then they don't reference the phone call for a pretty good chunk of the movie.
Right.
So,
because going back to what you were thinking about, oh, she's a psycho, then you think, well, did she just imagine that whole closet thing? And now is she imagining this phone call?
They do a very good job. And so, I mean, again, not reading the book, I don't know how much of this is the screenplay or the book, but they do a really good job of keeping you guessing because of the way the character's written and how unreliable, you know, this Stephanie can be, because she seems like she's so great, but then she also seems kind of like she's doing some kind of weird things and moving awfully fast, and you don't know what her agenda is. And then the thing with the half brother, where you're like, well, she's not quite like, that's not a normal thing you should do. So like, there's some weird stuff going on with this this woman.
She definitely has boundary issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So she's trying to get to the bottom of this crazy thing. So she calls, and at this point with seeing the mole on the other side, I'm like, oh, well, at this rate, like, then that definitely wasn't her, and she's still alive. I'm like, I mean, I love the movie The Prestige. You've both seen The Prestige?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all. I won't go any further, but I'm like, I've seen something similar to this. You know, I've started, like, I love that movie. I'm like, I've seen this before. And so I started thinking, oh, well, at this rate, she's calling her. There's a body, mole's on the other side. I'm like, she has a twin. That's just, at that point, I'm just like, that's what it is. But so she's trying to investigate what's going on here. And, this is when we get a flashback, of what really happened with the half brother. And so we find out that it's like a birthday party or something for her son. I think it happens at a birthday party and the half brother's there. And then the husband is very like, he sees the half brother playing with the kid, and he's very skeptical of their relationship. They're like very chummy, very close, Stephanie and her half brother. And he says,
Nikki's the other kid.
Yeah. So he's just basically like, is he mine? Is this kid even mine? And she's like, oh, of course, what are you talking about? You know, you're crazy. So then in the next scene, like the half brother and the husband are going out for a car ride. And so we see what happened, you know, and I think she had mentioned earlier it was a car accident to Emily.
Yep.
And so now we see them getting in the car. And so, you know, two and two together, it's like the car crashed. So I'm guessing that it was an altercation, like they got into it.
The husband was forcing the half-brother to go with him.
Yeah,
I took it as a murder-suicide.
Because the husband gives her a very knowing look as they get into the car. Mm.
And the half-brother's like, it'll be fine. Like, he's very smiling. He's like, it's fine. We're just talking, whatever. And, yeah, the husband is pissed. He thinks he knows that the kid isn't his. Like, he knows something's going on. But, like, I guess I just didn't, at the time, I didn't really even think of it. Like, I wasn't sure. I'm like, did they get into a fight and one steered it into the column?
Because when you see the car crash, it looks deliberate.
Yeah.
Like, it goes full speed.
No skid marks.
No slowing down. Just bam, right into
that's true. Into like a median between like of a high between two roads or whatever. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So, I mean, there you go. So we know now the husband killed the half brother and himself in that car accident over this issue. And
by the way, I think of it as a suicide murder, not a murder suicide. One of the rare cases where suicide murder actually works.
That's fair enough. It does. Yeah,
you don't get to flip the script very often.
Usually
so,
you commit suicide. Murder is off the table.
Right.
Yeah. That's very true. So anyway,
this message brought to you by the National Suicide Prevention Hotline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy your moment, Paul.
Thank you.
So I think this is more insight into Stephanie's mindset. I mean, we don't really know how reliable she is. She's doing some kind of weird things. She also has this trauma. So we can take it as that she's been involved with her half-brother, and now she's having a child. She had a child with her half-brother. And she's hiding it from the husband. And then her husband committed suicide and killed the half-brother. So, like, she's had a lot of trauma in her past.
Right.
So this does, again, kind of bring up the question, like, is she all there? Is she what she appears to be? So we see that scene, and then she goes to figure out where Emily really is, because she's alive and well. Where would she be? So she traces down who the actual artist of this painting that was in the foyer, the nude painting. Earlier when she commented on it, Emily says something like, oh, it's this person that, you know, I thought this person would amount to something, but they never became anybody. I took it as, you know, collateral for, you know, whatever. And I think she said they had a relationship. Like, they broke up and I stole this, though, in case they would actually become
someone. She was involved with that artist.
Yeah. So she tracks her down. We find out it was a woman, female artist, and she's in her studio with all these paintings.
Another Freaks and Geeks alum.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Is that Linda Cardellini?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we find out that Emily was her muse. Like, she said that, you know, I was doing really well. Then we were together and we broke up, and all I could paint was her. Like, all I could think of was her. And so her art,
which is the same thing the husband said, that, like, she kind of sucks the life out of
her. Oh, okay. Did he? He kind of blamed her for not,
because he's so obsessed with her even now, right? Like, they've been married for, you know, I took it, you know, 6-7 years, and that he still, like, constantly wants her. Like, we haven't got to it yet, but this constant, like, meet me in the bathroom in 20 seconds things that she does. You know?
On board the plane and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has a very interesting personality, Emily does. So anyway, and then now, you know, the artist is, like, just drawing knives. She's like, I couldn't draw anything but her, so now I just draw these knives. No one wants to buy them, so there's just paintings of knives everywhere. And you don't know quite what she's going to do. She seems kind of crazy. But Stephanie says, can you give me any clue of where she might be, or what do you have? And she says, everything I have left for her is in this box. And then she pulls a T-shirt out, and it says it's this Bible camp in Michigan, which is where the body was found.
Right.
So, and it's actually really close to where the car was found in this lake. And so she goes and investigates that, and she starts talking to the two people that run the Bible camp. I think she pretends that she has a kid that wants to go there. So they're like giving her a tour of the place. But she goes and finds these old yearbooks, and that is when we see, you know, solidifies that she had a twin, and it was Hope and Faith.
Yes.
Were these two twins here. And so she keeps on doing her detective work, and she goes through the phone book and is calling all the people with the same last name. And she eventually finds out where these kids or where their parents live. And so she goes and investigates, and finds, like, this old rundown house. The husband is, like, going out hunting, I think. And so, but the mom isn't all there. She's like very out of it.
And good to see Gene Smart again.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah.
It's very Grey Gardens.
Yes.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's a documentary about these two Kennedy cousins?
Somehow
they're related to Kennedy
cousins.
And they lived in the Hamptons, but they went kind of crazy.
Okay.
And they were hoarders, and they kept thinking that they were going to be part of high society and wealthy, and this filmmaker made a documentary about them. Honestly, people love the documentary. I thought the documentary was a little slow and kind of rambling. You're probably better off watching. I think there was an HBO movie with Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
Playing one of the, were they mother daughter?
I don't remember.
Yeah. But it takes that documentary, puts it more of a traditional narrative, and the performances are amazing.
Okay.
They really nail what the actual women were like, but just about how crazy, and they're living in this house that's just falling down around them.
Yeah. Well, it's a perfect description of what this scene is. I mean, this house is a mess, junk stacked everywhere, and this mom is just out of it. She's like rocking in front of a fireplace or whatever. She's just like, you know, in a total daze, and Stephanie is trying to ask questions and trying to get to the bottom of this. She pretends to be a maid or something because the house is a mess, and so she's like, oh, your husband hired me to clean the place up. And I think it's funny that then the mom's like, yeah, start in the upstairs bathroom.
Right.
And so she's, you know, just this is another great comedy element that, you know, Paul Feig is able to work in here.
And she's like, well, it's not lying. I'm cleaning the house.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
she's
exactly.
really clean. Yeah.
So she's scrubbing the toilets and everything. Yeah. But she eventually is able to ask questions. She's like, oh, I saw a picture of these girls. Are they your daughters? And it obviously is a very sore subject. And so the mom starts just talking in her crazy talk about these girls. And then she's like, who are you? Are you from the insurance company? And Stephanie's like, yeah, I am.
Which also shows you how crazy they are that they think all this time later that they're still going to be insurance money.
Right. And so we find out that the girls had burned down their parents' house. Now, the dad was abusive.
Right.
And yeah. so they decided that these two girls decided that they would burn down the house and run away. And so that is why they've been on the run. That's when we figure out, okay, that's why she doesn't want her picture taken. So she is, you know, she's been on the run for all these different years. And so we see in this flashback that the girls had this plan that, okay, we're going to split up and get away. And then we're both going to meet up at, you know, this place at this time.
Okay. Now I have to interrupt you here because yeah. I think this is the point where I have to ask, it was hope and faith and charity. There was a third sister, and that's what the tattoos are for, right?
But the sister was, I think it was like a miscarriage or a baby. Like, it wasn't a triplet that, like, they grew up with and died in the fire or anything like that.
Okay, that's what I was unclear
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it wasn't, the charity thing wasn't as much of, like, that wasn't an element of the story where it's like, oh, we killed our sister, anything like that. No,
okay.
The child, it was just a
miscarriage or something.
Yeah, yeah. It was, yeah. I mean, not to undermine that,
still
but it wasn't important.
Or
yes, it wasn't important to the whole burning the house
okay,
down thing.
Okay.
Yeah, as teens or whatever, running away, or, you know, there were just two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, so they're on the run and they find out that Emily meets at this bus station or wherever they're supposed to meet up at the time. And, I can't remember, whatever. The sister, the one that is dead in the bottom of the lake, did
Faith.
Not show up. Faith. Okay, so Faith is the not Emily. Okay. I can't, because they've got fake names, and it's like, I can't. But anyway, so the sister never showed up. And so we find out that, okay, so they live their separate lives now. Emily has this great job and this career, and she's a mom and is married and everything. And then we find out all of a sudden the way that the murder, death, came up is that Faith had actually called her and was blackmailing her. She said, I'm going to turn us in. I'm going to admit everything to the police. And Emily doesn't want to throw everything away or, you know, and she's like, you can't do that. But she's also a junkie.
She's a junkie. She's got nothing. So she might as well
lose.
She has nothing to lose when she yeah. throws everything
no
away.
No family, you know, because Emily's like, I have a son now. I have a family. And yeah, Faith has nothing. And so this is also why, and we didn't mention it earlier, but now it's relevant. They said that there her liver was damaged. And the dead body, the liver was damaged. There was heroin shot up all over her body
right,
and everything.
Right.
And, you know, Stephanie's like, I knew she liked to have a drink, but
she never had any marks on her arms.
No,
right.
No. And she didn't take her as someone that was like a heroin user. It just, yeah. you know, and she said, no, that's not her. And so another weird thing where now it all makes sense. And so you've got this junkie that's basically blackmailing her, says, you're going to pay me or I'm going to, you know, whatever. And then she's just crazy. She's like, oh, let's go swimming like we used to back at the camp. And so she strips down. She runs into the water. We see the scene where then, you know, the Emily runs in after her. They're both in the water. And then Emily murders her. She's just like, she just has no other option. She's like, I can't have you ruining my whole life. And so she drowns her. And that is, you know, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Stephanie's figured this out, but they're both now it's like they're playing this game of cat and mouse. Like, you know, she's sending her messages through her vlog. You know, Stephanie's like sending her secret messages to try to get her to come back and meet up. Meanwhile, Emily actually goes and I think she sets up an appointment or sets up how does the husband go to the restaurant? Who does he think he's meeting? I can't remember.
Oh man, I forget.
Was it an insurance thing or something? I can't remember. Somehow she lures the husband to a restaurant for a meeting. I just can't remember what it was. But then all of a sudden she's like in a trench coat and a hat or whatever disguise. And she shows up and she's like, it's me. Hello. And this is the first time like he honestly did not know she was still alive. Like the husband is innocent in all this, but she's a very manipulative and crazy person. And so she is basically starts pitting them against each other. And that's where we get this real game of cat and mouse. She talks to the husband and says, you know, what's with you moving on so fast? This woman's in our house. And he,
Cause she never envisioned that he would end up with Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
And like, so that was a wrinkle. She just thought she would disappear for a little bit, get the money. And then those two could get out of, could move to another country. Yeah. And everything would be
abscond with the funds. But now it's, now he's actually had her move in and, you know, took her clothes out of the closet and you know, she's taking over. She's being the mom to their son. And so he really downplays it and he's like, no, she didn't mean anything, which she's crazy. And so I took him as a very genuine person. I took him as he does care about Stephanie, but he's like, no, she didn't mean anything. But I didn't take that as. Did you? I didn't really.
No, I took it. I agree. I took it as he was telling her
what she wanted to hear
because he was scared of her.
He was.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways, he's an abused spouse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she's the one.
It's just it's not physical. It's psychological.
So, right. Yeah. So, and I only say that because it's going to come up later that she actually, Emily records this conversation. We find out later and plays it back. That makes Stephanie mad that he's saying this. But like in my mind, like the husband is innocent. He does care for Stephanie really, and you know, it's just crazy pants is playing them against each other. So then Emily goes to Stephanie and says, this was all his plan. He didn't really ever care about you. Listen to this recording. It was his idea to take the money, move away, and do all this. So he was playing you the whole time. And so she pits them against each other, and I just keep feeling really bad for the husband because I'm like, he's innocent and all this.
Yeah.
And now I thought that they were going to either kill him or make him arrested and they were going to run off or something. And I'm like, this poor husband, he's totally innocent in all this. Stephanie moves back out. She moves back to her little house or apartment or wherever she lived before. You know, she had moved everything in. Now she's moved back.
Because you can do that in movies.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right. Once you move
out of your house, you still have it. It can go back anytime. And all your stuff is still there.
Yeah. I'm like, how long are these houses sitting on the market just waiting for them to move back? I mean, I know that sometimes it's hard to sell a house, but geez, months later.
By the way, good luck trying to get out of that realtor contract.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, can I just move back in there? It's fine, you know. So eventually through these cryptic messages and everything, she gets, Stephanie gets Emily to come meet her at a cemetery and she's pouring the drink that Emily had taught her about earlier. It's this, what is it? A martini with a twist of lemon or something. It's
a spray of lemon.
Oh no, I'm sorry. It's a gin martini because Ryan Reynolds owns a gin company.
Oh yeah.
Aviation gin. Okay. Which is what's in this movie. It's Ryan Reynolds' gin company that he just bought. So, like, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Good product placement there. But anyway, so it's this gin martini thing or whatever. But she makes two of them. And here comes Blake Lively with another awesome outfit and a cane. And she's looking awesome. And she's like, how'd you figure it out? And they have this little showdown. But so now she is trying to get Stephanie to work against the husband. You know, they talk about the story with the sister and everyone's up to speed here. And so now you think that she's going to turn against the husband. And how does the showdown happen? I can't remember exactly. Is this basically where they lure?
They all end up in the house at the same time.
Am I missing something in between though? When they meet up and it seems like she's going to turn on the husband, but then they're really working together. Spoilers.
Well, she takes out the gun and shoots him.
Right. But I mean, am I missing anything before this final showdown? Because this is basically the end. Okay. So they all meet up in the house and then all three of them are there. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, this just seems too weird that Stephanie's going along and believing this crazy person and she's really going to turn on the husband. So I'm like, this has to be a setup of some sort. And Emily starts confessing And then Steph and she takes out a gun, shoots Anna Kendrick, pretends to kind of be crazy and like mad at him for
I can't believe you would set me up like this. I loved you.
Yeah, and then you know, at first Blake Lively's like, "Whoa, hold on here." And she's like, "No," and she shoots the husband. But then Emily figures out it's theatrics. She starts slow clapping. All right, everybody, get up. She starts, confessing to the whole thing.
By the way, remember where I said I never can figure these things out, even though my wife can?
Yeah.
It was at that moment that I thought, okay, something's up here, because the blood on his shirt was way too red.
Right.
And I know that movie special effects people are much better than that.
Right.
Going all the way back to The Sting.
Right.
You know, when the blood is coming out of Redford's mouth at the end, it doesn't look fake.
Right.
This looked completely fake, like the kind of thing her character, Stephanie, would make in her kitchen on one of her vlogs.
Yeah.
Today, I'm going to teach you how to make fake blood.
Right. It's very true.
And it's bright red.
Well, I'm glad you figured it out before the end, Paul. I'm glad you figured it out. So you still had a couple minutes left to go. But,
So it's like 6 minutes left of the movie. I finally got there.
So she confesses the whole thing, and they're like, aha, but we've got you. And she's like, oh, these wires or whatever were supposed to record me. And so she found the two wires. So she basically was doing the evil villain, like the smart villain of like, oh, I'm going to confess this thing, but I already know that you were trying to record me and I've taken care of that. And so then she goes more and more into the plan and it seems like all is lost. But then right before, I guess, does Blake Lively have a gun or a real gun, right?
Because she shoots him for real.
Yeah. Because she ends up shooting the husband. And then you think that she's going to shoot Anna Kendrick after she's confessed the whole thing. But then Anna Kendrick's like, you know, say hello to my millions of viewers or whatever. Come to find out, she had a hidden camera on one of the pins of her dress or blouse or whatever.
No, a button.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, a button. She had a hidden camera in her button. So she's like,
live
say hello
streaming
to all.
The whole thing.
She's live streaming the whole thing, which I was like, she's a vlogger. I knew it had to come into play. So that was cool how they did it with a button. I thought maybe she had just a phone set up at a bookshelf or something.
Right.
But even more clever because you couldn't see it. They're so small.
Yeah.
But she's live vlogging. So I think that's great. Again, it all ties in with like, that's a very real thing that could happen.
Now, let's just stop again right here.
Okay.
Because while all of this is going on, the police are going to the wrong house. Remember? The police are going to her house, or I don't even remember where they were going to, but they're not paying attention to the live stream on her vlog. The police don't find out about it until the vloggers contact the police, and then they show up after the whole thing is over.
Right,
because it's the one gay dad who ends up hitting her with the car when she tries
to
escape.
Now, you don't know he's gay.
I assume he was gay. I assume he's gay because he's gay in everything I've ever seen him in.
Yes. I know. I'm just giving you trouble because he never has. You don't know. It's just like all the moms at school that are all very like, what would you say? Like they're all, I wouldn't say
they
jealous.
They are the snarky Greek chorus.
I mean,
right.
Anna Kendrick is the perfect mom and they're, giving their commentary.
And I thought those three characters are the big weakness in this movie. Not big, but they are a weakness in this movie.
Yeah, they didn't,
I didn't like
do
them at all.
For you, but he's one of the moms, quote unquote.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, you presume he is, but I'm just like, you know, they never say he's gay. So I was just giving.
He
crap.
Could be the stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, come on. But anyway, I didn't even remember the whole police thing. But what happens is, he's watching the live vlog, and so she is trying to escape after she finds out that this was all being broadcast, and so she runs out the door and he mows her down with his Prius or whatever and she goes flying over the car.
Yeah,
because
it was silent.
Yeah, because it was silent but deadly or whatever.
You can't hear him coming.
Right. So he mows Blake Lively down and saves Anna Kendrick's. I guess, does she still have her gun? I can't remember why. I thought he saved her, but was he just stopping her from getting away? I'm sorry. This is what happens when I see a movie a week and a half before.
I think he just runs her down in the
just to stop
street.
Her
yeah.
from getting away. Okay.
Yeah.
So he runs her down, saves the day. She is taken away in handcuffs. And that's pretty much how it all wraps up. There's a little epilogue of like,
a vlog episode, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a vlog episode and she's like super.
Yeah. Now she's got like 70,000 subscribers.
Yeah, she's got tons of subscribers. And then doesn't she say, like, and now, because of all your help and whatever, now I'm going to be working on my own cases. And, like, it goes to a website or something where she's, like, got her own detective agency, you know. So
Have they made more books in this? Is this a series?
I don't know. I mean,
it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, that book just came out in 2017.
Right.
So, I mean, I can't imagine that there would be even that much room. But
maybe they just bought the rights to the book and the characters, because this is going to be, it's going to have to be a sequel or a TV show or
they're
something.
They're definitely setting it up to be some kind of a fun, you know, another mystery that she'll be solving. But anyway, so she opens up her own detective agency, and then after that, they go to the little epilogue, you know, black screen with white text about where everyone is now. And the only thing that I really didn't like about this is, I mean, Stephanie's relationship with the husband seemed so genuine, and once they all figured out that Blake Lively was crazy, and, like, I mean, Stephanie was so good with their kid, with Nikki and everything. I kind of wanted them to be together, but it's just like he moved away with Nikki and now he's a successful professor or whatever. I don't know. I don't like how they weren't together, and I guess they didn't want to tie them down for future movies or whatnot.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? But it just seemed like after they've been through so much and they were in love and so good together that I just felt like they would be together after the whole crazy incident. But they just did the, you know, he moved on and they said father and son are very happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's got her detective agency. I think Emily's in jail for 40 year or life or whatever. You know, she's away. And
yeah, she'd been for a while. I mean, she killed somebody.
Yeah. So,
and attempted murder.
Yeah. And then I think other than that, there's just one other little stinger. I like a mid-credit scene or something. Isn't Blake Lively playing, am I making this up, she playing basketball in prison or something?
Oh, yeah. And they basically were making it look like she was taking over the prison.
She's running the joint because
she was the tough girl on the
block. Because, I mean, with her personality, it's only natural. So, yeah. So
I got to say, you mentioned a few times how great Anna Kendrick is in this movie. Completely reliable because you know how good an actress she is.
Yeah, she is very
This
dependable.
Is the best thing I've ever seen Blake Lively do. I liked her a lot in The Shallows. I think I first noticed her in The Town back in 2010 with John Hamm.
Yeah. What about in The Fighter? Isn't she in The Fighter?
I don't think so.
Who am I thinking of?
Plays Amy Adams?
Amy Adams.
Oh, I mean, that's what I'm thinking of. I thought she was. I thought she was.
No, she was also in The Age of Adeline, which is. But
our most popular.
One of our most popular episodes.
I know.
We don't know why, but.
Gossip Girl is where she started.
Yeah, but I thought she was terrific in The Shallows. A couple
years
ago.
See, I never saw that, but everyone says that's really good.
It's surprisingly good.
And
we were joking about shark movies earlier. Yeah. That's a really good shark movie.
Well, I guess I saw the movie with the two people, Open Water?
Open Water?
Yeah. Which was good. I mean, that was a while.
This is much better.
Is it? Okay.
Because it's just her and the shark.
Do they fall in love?
For 90% of the movie. No, it's her trying not to get eaten by the shark.
Okay.
A day when she's surfing alone in this cove. And she's terrific.
I keep hearing how good it is. I'm gonna have to check it out. So I haven't seen that one, but yeah, I agree. She's excellent in this. I really like her style sense. I think her character is really well written. She's funny. You know, she's very. It's a cool character. I think she did great in this. I like Blake Lively. I would like to see her getting more roles that can, you know, show what she can actually do. But
They're
both great together. I mean, Anna Kendrick, like you said, always dependable, very funny.
Such good chemistry with
the
two of them.
They really do.
They're having fun.
They are.
Yeah.
They're good together. There are some duos on screen that just don't work. Like that one with Mila Kunis, I couldn't even tell you the name of that movie. What's that? Mila Kunis spy movie?
Oh, The Spy Who Dumped Me.
Okay.
Which I wanted to like that movie.
Was that Kate McKinnon?
Kate McKinnon. And it's like, those, I didn't, you know, that didn't work for me. But like in this movie, you know, they were great. You know, and it, I mean, it's too, obviously those two won't be together in the sequel. You know, I mean.
Well, I don't know. You could have all sorts of plot devices.
You could, I guess. But, you know, they're really good together. It doesn't seem like they'd be going the direction for them to team up. I mean, Blake Lively was the villain. She's put away now.
Sure.
But I really did like them both. And, again, this just kind of reminded me of I really liked Veronica Mars. Veronica Mars is coming back.
Right.
So they're getting another one finally. They made a movie, and that was it after the series has been over. Now the series is coming back. So it reminded me of that. I don't know why, just because of a detective agency.
That.
A funny comedy,
yeah, it's
but...
funny. It's female-driven. Yeah.
And so I'm kind of excited. I think a sequel with Anna Kendrick solving mysteries, like, that's...
Yeah, I'm kind of down.
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I went in having no idea what to expect.
And Tom, you and I go to a lot of press screenings where there are hundreds of other people, non-press, who are there.
Right.
Which was the case. Did you see this
screening? I did not go to the screening. I actually bought a ticket.
Okay. How many times at a press screening do you hear the audience buzzing with excitement after the movie they're leaving?
Couple times a year, maybe.
This was one of those movies.
Yeah, I believe it.
And I turned to my wife and I said, this movie's going to be a word-of-mouth hit.
Yeah.
That's what, and I mean,
I was very happy to see it in the number two spot this week with only a 36% drop, because it deserves it. I mean, I don't think it'll ever be, you know, a $150 million movie, but I could definitely see it being one of those movies, if they do bother to make a sequel to it, that the sequel outperforms because people will discover it.
Yeah.
You know, on home video.
Yeah, I agree.
Ironically enough, similar to like Austin Powers.
Yes.
Like Austin Powers was not a big hit. And but that second one was a juggernaut because so many people found it on home video.
Right.
So,
yeah. So I enjoyed it. Paul Feig, I think it's really cool how he's made these female-driven films that have done really well. I mean, he's got a knack for it. He's a talented director. I hope he continues to do good things. I hadn't heard from him for a while before this. Like
Ghostbusters.
Did he do Ghostbusters?
I think this is his first movie since Ghostbusters.
Yeah, definitely right. His first one since Ghostbusters. Yeah. I had forgotten that that makes sense that with the cast and everything that he did.
And I like that he kind of took a swerve.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't go completely outside of his wheelhouse, but it's like, it's still, like, he seems to work very well with female casts.
Yeah.
He seems to work very well in comedy. And this is both of those things, but it's also something totally different.
Yeah, no, I mean, this genre, I mean, other than female-driven, I mean, this is so different with the murder mystery type.
Right.
I was not a fan of Ghostbusters, so I guess that's why I forgot, like, I considered him gone for a while since those first two that were really good, because I'm like, but I had forgotten. I blanked that one out of my memory.
I was fine with Ghostbusters. Yeah.
Me too.
I liked it. I laughed. I don't know what more you want from it.
Yeah, I would like to see this become a trend, particularly at a time now where we're talking about all these, you know, Me Too and Time's Up and getting women into more positions of power, all of that going on now. I would love to see this movie be the reason Hollywood goes, you know what? Let's make more movies like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is refreshing. I mean, that's the thing, is that this movie is good, and it's funny, it's suspenseful, and again, with the female-driven cast, I think you're going to just keep, we're getting more and more, and I think we're going to keep, as long as they keep the quality up like this.
Yep.
I love seeing it, too. I mean, because this is a movie that, I mean, I guess with this script, with this story, I guess it lends, I mean, you have the mommy vlogger, you know, you have the moms, the fashion world, I mean, obviously that could be male too, but you know, I mean, this story maybe is more lending itself towards being female driven, but you know, mysteries in general, when you talk about detective agencies, that's why stuff like Veronica Mars is so refreshing, because the detective is always a guy,
right?
I mean, traditionally.
Sure.
And so when you see a murder mystery like this and it is female led, it's refreshing. And it's, this movie is a great testament to, there's no reason why it couldn't be. And so, yeah, I think it would be great to see more in this vein. And this is a sequel where, you know, some movies wrap up, especially mysteries, where you're like, okay, that story's done. I don't really need to see a sequel. But the way they've set it up and with this character that we now know isn't completely nuts. Like, at first I was like, yeah. I don't know. But like, she's, you know, she's quirky. She's Anna Kendrick. It's like, I think that could be fun, her trying to stumble through this world of, she's not a PI or a detective, you know, but like, she's a vlogger, but like,
right,
to see her stumbling and going on these adventures. Yeah.
Also, you don't have to do, I mean, if you're going to do female led mysteries, it doesn't have to be Gone Girl or Girl on a Train where they're totally serious.
Right.
The sense of humor is a big selling point for me,
yeah,
about this movie, The Simple Favor.
Oh, and I think that's where, I guess that's maybe where, so that like The Spy Who Dumped Me, it's a little different genre. It's the spy genre instead of murder mystery. But you still have this duo, this female duo that's going in, and they're out of their element. So they're not really spies, where Anna Kendrick isn't really a detective. You know, they're out of their element. And that was not a very well-written movie, where this movie is well-written. So you've got the serious elements where it doesn't ever get too serious, but you still have the murder and the investigation, which is a serious subject in police investigations. But then you have the humor, which is interjected, which Paul Feig is obviously very good at, like we talked about. Whereas, like, Spy Who Dumped Me was just kind of stupid humor. And so it didn't mix as well with the action. And so this is the example of, like, what I would like to see more. This is how you take that fish out of water, or that, you know, mixing the genres and with a smart script. And I think it was really balanced.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect balance.
Yep. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yep, I agree.
Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
Can I plug my trivia website?
Absolutely. This is what we're here for.
All right. It only takes a minute to play, and it's free, and Kevin designed the website.
But go to it anyway.
It's harrischallenge.com.
It's fun. It's always very, it's topical. Paul takes very relevant topical subject matter, and whether it be sports or movies or, you know, he's really good about working. It's fun to play. It's not these trivia questions. Sometimes you get these trivia questions where they're like, don't know, don't care. These are dumb. Like, I love the way that you're able to work it into things that are relevant.
Thank you. It's five questions, and if you do well enough in that category, you earn a bonus category of five more questions, and then you're done. It's taken up a minute or two of your day.
And you get bragging rights. I mean, if you do well. If you don't do well, you can share it, but
yeah,
I mean,
I have people who tell me that they never share it because they never get to the second category, but they love playing it anyway. So
awesome.
That's harrischallenge.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you want to find the show online, you can do it at Twitter at Real Spoilers or on Facebook at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers and don't forget about Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this week. I have no idea what's opening next week. Night school?
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. We'll have to think. We'll have to think on that.
Deep fried taco.
Yeah, we haven't done one in a while. Maybe
that that movie does not look good at all, and the reviews are kind of backing that up. I've read some early reviews, and it's apparently terrible. Which, I mean, I just don't know that it's going to lend to our type of discussion. Just being
comedies are hard to review typically because it's very pass fail. You either laugh or you didn't.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's not funny.
And there's another movie coming out called The Hate You Give.
That could be interesting.
Which is also screening for press this week. Yeah. Again, I don't know
what's
when
the
open.
Hate you give.
It's like a young adult book, and it's about a black girl whose boyfriend gets killed by the cops.
That looks really good.
Yeah.
That looks really good.
Yeah.
That might be
so.
Awesome.
Yeah, so maybe we'll tackle that one. So who knows? We'll figure it out, and you'll find out shortly after.
We always
we
do.
Yeah, so that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, Tony shoots the albino and saves the Pope.
Move, bitch. Get out the way. Get out the way.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.